Hare Krishna. So I was just thinking as we were chanting how Srila Prabhupada on different occasions has given the example that if a young girl has learnt how to dance and she's about to go on the stage, and when she goes on the stage, of course, she has to take off her veil. So in India, where the girls are very chaste, if she sees that her parents or her teacher or someone respectable is in the audience, still she has to dance. Still she has to dance. So tonight, I would like to try and dance through the next scene, chapter, the act one of Shivadagda Madhava. So yesterday we heard the introduction, the prastavana, and basically that creates a bridge or an entrance for the audience into the drama itself. It introduces the play and its importance, and also the qualifications that are necessary for the audience to go deeply into the subject matter. So the qualifications that were mentioned were that one should be thinking of others' welfare, and that even if one was wealthy, learned, or intelligent, one should be very humble. And with these qualifications, one gains the opportunity to hear Srila Rupa Goswami, who described himself very humbly also. He said, "O learned devotees, I am by nature ignorant and low, and yet even though it is from me that Vidagdha Madhava has come, it is filled with descriptions of the transcendental attributes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because of this, will not such a literature bring about the attainment of the highest goal of life? Although," he gives an example, "although its wood may be ignited by a low-class man, nevertheless fire can purify gold. Therefore, although I am very low by nature, this book may help to cleanse the dirt from within the hearts of the golden devotees." So I also feel, of course, inconspicuous way, the same feeling as Srila Rupa Goswami, that this is subject matter's embodiment of Krishna's most wonderful, beautiful pastimes. So if anything comes to life from reading this play, it will be purely by the mercy of Radha and Krishna themselves. So at the end of the prastavana, as we heard, the assistant stage manager and the narrator, they were discussing backwards and forwards about the audience, about the play, and then suddenly the narrator pointed, "Look!" And everybody looked, and he said, "O king of actors, there is Purnamasi. She's walking on the street. Slowly she's left Nanda Maharaja's palace and she's slowly walking on the street. And this is what she said off stage. She said, 'O king of actors, how did your ear become decorated with the flower that is the secret of this drama? The secret that I will arrange the meeting of Radha and Krishna.'" Now, scene one, the next scene, opens with the same verse. Purnamasi enters onto the stage, and when she enters into the stage, she says the same thing. "O king of actors, how did your ear become decorated with the flower that is the secret of this drama? The secret that I will arrange the meeting of Radha and Krishna." Purnamasi enters with her granddaughter, Nandimukhi. She says, "Child Nandimukhi, by singing this verse, the narrator pleased me. Nandi said, "Noble lady, did he speak the truth?" Purnamasi says, "O girl with beautiful thighs, the tree of my good fortune is withered at the root. How will it produce a fruit like that, a fruit that will make me qualified to arrange a new meeting of the beautiful and auspicious divine couple?" Nandi says to her grandmother, "Noble lady, if you are destined to arrange Brishabhanu Nandini Radha's meeting with Krishna, then why did Radha leave the land of Gokul, which is so favorable for that meeting, and secretly reside in the sacred village of Santanuvas?" Purnamasi replied, "Because she fears cruel King Kamsa, my child." Nandi, "Noble lady, how did the king learn about Radha?" Purnamasi says, "He learnt about Radha's great beauty in this way. Even if one very carefully hides it, musk's sweet scent at once reveals where it is. In the same way, even though they were very carefully hidden, Radha's beauty and virtues became well known everywhere." Nandi continues and she says, "Noble lady, Yasoda's nurse Mukhara." Now Mukhara is also Radha's grandmother. Mukhara, you will hear she will come in many places in this drama. So Nandi says, "Yasoda's nurse Mukhara brought her granddaughter Radha back to Gokul. Radha then accepted the hand of Abhimanyu, the son of Jyotila, in marriage. A more unsuitable match could never have been made. Radha cannot tolerate the touch of a hand of any man other than Krishna. O mother, how can you remain aloof when these things are happening?" Purnamasi says, "Why should I care?" Nandi says, "How can you talk like that?" Purnamasi starts to laugh and she says, "This false marriage of Radha and Abhimanyu is simply a trick that Yogamaya has played to cheat Kamsa. Radha and all the other gopis are Krishna's lovers eternally." Nandi very joyfully says, "So then now that Radha has returned to Gokul, are you free from all worries?" Purnamasi says, "Child, what you say is true. My worry about Kamsa is now less, although now I am beginning to worry about Abhimanyu." Noticing that the black bumblebee of Krishna is very fond of playing amongst the newly flowering vines of the gopis, Abhimanyu has become jealous. Now he desires to take the golden lotus flower Radha to another forest. Nandi says, "Now Yogamaya will act?" Purnamasi, "Daughter, independent Yogamaya now stands aloof. Who can understand her actions?" Nandi, "Is there any way to stop him?" Purnamasi, "Child, simply by speaking sweet and clever words, I will stop this shallow Abhimanyu." Nandi says joyfully, "Respected mother, Govardhan Mala," this is the husband of Chandravali, who is the other main gopi in this drama, "Govardhan Mala is appointed by King Kamsa to watch over all the activities here in Gokul. So why does he not become upset when Krishna enjoys pastimes with Chandravali?" Purnamasi says, "Daughter, Govardhan Mala is very proud. He does not think the king's order is very important." Nandi says, "What happened when Krishna and Chandravali first met?" Purnamasi, daughter, when they first met, they fell deeply in love. For me to do anything more would be like trying to crush what is already powder. Nandi, noble lady, why do you love Krishna so deeply that you came to Gokul, leaving Ujjain, because Krishna was not there? Daughter, I did it because of the mercy of my guru's advice. Purnamasi's guru is Narada Muni. Nandi, does fortunate Sandipani Muni, that's her son, know that you are here? Purnamasi, yes. He sent his son, Purnamasi's grandson, Madhu Mangal, with me to serve me. Nandi, you are very kind to Madhu Mangal. You gave him a great festival of friendship for the lotus moon that is Nanda's son. Purnamasi, daughter, Radha is my great treasure. Please help her to fall in love with Krishna. Nandi starts to laugh and says, noble lady, Radha has already climbed to the highest mountain top of love for Krishna. Purnamasi, how do you know? Nandi, whenever, in the course of an ordinary conversation, she hears the name Krishna, the hairs of her body stand up and she shows all the symptoms of ecstasy. Purnamasi, daughter, that is the right response. After all, I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth, and we then desire many, many mouths. And when that name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. Nandi, noble lady, accompanied by her friends Lalita and Vishakha, Radha worshipped the sun god. And accompanied by her friends Saibhya and Padma, Chandravali worshipped Parvati. I can only guess that it was by the mercy of these demigods that these gopis attained such love for Krishna. Purnamasi, although they went to the forest to worship demigods, the beautiful brown-eyed girls of Braj found that love for Krishna suddenly awakened within them. Nandi, Radha's natural love for Krishna makes her friends very fortunate. Purnamasi, daughter, on my order, please go and ask the skillful artist Vishakha to draw, for the pleasure of her friend's lotus eyes, a picture of Nanda's son. Nandi, as the noble lady orders. Purnamasi says, then on the pretext of carrying a gift of Modaka candies, I will enter the Vrindavan forest and delight Krishna's ears with the sweetness of the two auspicious syllables, Radha. Nandi, noble lady, look, again, look, accompanied by Balaram, Madhu Mangal, Sridham and a host of friends, and embraced by the affectionate Nanda and Yasoda, his parents, Krishna now goes from Gokul to the Vrindavan forest. Purnamasi, joyfully looking at Krishna, says, the beauty of Krishna's eyes surpasses the beauty of the white lotus flowers. His yellow garments surpass the brilliance of fresh decorations of kumkum. His ornaments of selected forest flowers surpass the hankerings of the best of garments. And his bodily beauty possesses mind-attracting splendor, greater than the jewels known as Marakat Mani, or emeralds. Purnamasi says, I will go now and deliver the candies. You go to Vishakha. And this is the end of the first act, first scene. Scene 2 begins. Krishna, as previously described, enters. Krishna is looking ahead very joyfully at the cows and he says, I think a host of crystal mountains pretending to be these beautiful cows have come here. Or perhaps it is the Mandakini Ganges River from the city of Indra that has come disguised as these cows to please and serve the glorious Jamuna River that now plays in Vrindavan. And Nanda comes up very close to his son and puts his arm around him and he says, Child, you speak well. Look behind us at the beauty of Raj. And they look in all directions. How beautiful Vrindavan is. From Govardhan to Kaliya Lake, your land of Braj is very beautiful, like a great ocean of beauty made glorious with many palaces and goshalas. Krishna says, Friend Madhu Mangal, my father and mother have come to me from far away, so I should quickly go to the Braj village with my mother. Yasoda says, Son, why did you not remember to come home this afternoon? The delicious lunch I carefully cooked for you is now growing cold. Madhu Mangal, at the beginning of this speech, Krishna affectionately glances at Madhu Mangal, and Madhu Mangal says, O Queen of Gokul, please listen. I swear on the cows that Krishna is not at fault. He stays in the forest because he is attracted by all the playful girls. Madhu Mangal's speech remains unfinished. He's put his foot in it. Krishna says, embarrassed, he says aside, This fool is now going to describe my pastimes with the gopis. I must signal him to stop. And Madhu Mangal says, Oh friend, why do you stop me as I speak to your saintly mother? Krishna says, alas, because of this fool, I have fallen into a network of embarrassment. Madhu Mangal continues and he says, Dear mother, what I really meant to say was that Krishna, who wears yellow garments, stays in the forest to play with his friends, the cowherd boys. Krishna says, How can any other desire stay within my heart? Yasoda says, Child Madhu Mangal, I know it is true. Lalita and the other gopis all tell me that these boys harass us. Then Nanda says, My dear wife, in Gokul, is there any suitable young girl we can marry this boy to? And Yasoda looks surprised and she says, Noble master, he is only a little boy. The milk is still in his mouth. Is this the right time to marry him? And Madhu Mangal says quietly to his friend Krishna, he says, Friend, it is true that you have milk in your mouth. Still, thousands of youthful young girls are greedy for that milk. Nanda says, Child, look. Oh, Mukunda, fragrant like a lotus flower, her eyes resting in the handsomeness of your moon-like face, again and again, your mother showers her garments with the milk flowing from her water-pot-like breasts. Then Nanda very joyfully embraces Krishna and says, Oh, Krishna, the great festival of your touch brings to me a cool sweetness that defeats camphor or moonlight or nalada roots, lotus flowers, and sandalwood. Krishna says, Father, pulled by hunger, the cows are waiting for me. So please return home. Nanda says, as the child says, and he affectionately gazes at Krishna, then Nanda and Yasoda leave the stage. Krishna looks ahead and he says, the sweet, fragrant honey oozing from the newly grown mango buds is again and again attracting groups of bumblebees. And this forest is trembling in the softly moving breezes from the Malaya hills, which are full of sandalwood trees. Thus the forest of Vrindavan is increasing my transcendental pleasure. Lord Balaram says, my dear friend Sridham, just see how this forest of Vrindavan is full of transcendental creepers and trees. You can see how the tops of the creepers are full of flowers and intoxicated bees are buzzing around them, humming songs that please the ear and surpass even the Vedic hymns. Krishna says, friend Madan Mangal, staying here with you and the others, I will delight the creatures of Vrindavan with the sound of my flute. And he places the flute to his lips. And Balaram looks around and says, what a wonder. They are all becoming opposite to what they were. And they look around at the forest. He says, when Krishna plays by the Jamuna shore, kissing his flute, the waters of the streams become stunned and solid. The rocks become soft and melt, and the mountains, no longer standing still, tremble and move about. Madan Mangal says, how wonderful! Drinking a flood of nectar that is the sweet sound of Krishna's flute, the cows are stunned with bliss, and now they are sprinkling the flowers with a great flowing wave of milk. With his hand, he pushes Krishna and says, dear friend, why be proud? By its very nature, this flute makes everyone wild with bliss. You are only the flute's helper. Then a voice up in the clouds off stage says, the transcendental vibration of Krishna's flute blocked the movement of the rain clouds. It struck the Gandhavas full of wonder and agitated the meditation of great saintly persons like Sanak and Sananda. It created wonder in the mind of Lord Brahma and wrought intense curiosity that agitated the mind of Bali Maharaj, who was otherwise firmly fixed. And it made Anantadev, the carrier of the planets, whirl around and penetrated the strong coverings of the universe. Thus the sound of the flute in the hands of Krishna created a wonderful situation. Then Balaram looks up and he says, why does Narada, hiding in the clouds, recite such beautiful poetry and play his veena? Then Madan Mangal looks around. He looks up. He suddenly becomes terrified. He says, help! Help! Let's run away! Quick, let's run away! Sridham says, fool, why are you speaking all this nonsense? Madan Mangal, frightened, looks up and says, foolish Gopa, don't you see? Riding on a swan and accompanied by a naked ghost, grabbing from many snakes, is a four-handed yaksha or rakshasa approaching us? Madan Mangal looks up again and trembles and said, and led by that demon whose body is covered with eyes. All those demons are about to attack us from the sky. That's what I think. I think they are all about to become Kamsa's servants. So frightened, Madhumangal hides, placing his head behind Krishna. Krishna says to the side, "Why, attracted by the sweetness of the flute music, do the kings of all directions now hide in the clouds?" Madhumangal, looking and sighing, he says, "Those wicked demons are agitated, stunned and frightened, merely by the sound of my friend's flute. But I am alive. Oh, wicked demons," he says, "you stand. By cursing you or by striking you with arrows from my bow, I will crush your bald heads." Balaram looks at him and says, "Friend, don't talk like that. These two persons are Brahma and Shiva. And on their left is Indra and the leader of the demigods." Madhumangal says, "Indeed." He sighs a sigh of relief and he says, "Actually, I knew it all along. I was only joking. But you were all afraid, thinking that the demigods were Rakshasas. You were all going to run away." Krishna smiles and says, "O friend of the demigods, in others you see your own foolishness." Then Balaram is looking up and he says, "Look," he's pointing out each of the demigods, he says, "Look, overcome with ecstasy, as he listens with his eight ears to Krishna's flute, Lord Brahma is rolling about on the back of his swan." And then again there is some Veena music heard from the sky. And he says, "When splendid with the nectar moonlight of flute music, the moon of Krishna's face rises. The ocean of the demigod Shiva floods beyond its boundaries." Then Balaram says, "And just see how after hearing the transcendental sound of Krishna's flute, Indra, the king of heaven, is crying in his heavenly kingdom. From his teardrops falling on the ground, Vrindavan appears to have become a celestial residence of the demigods." So all the demigods are appreciating so much the sound of Krishna's flute. And Krishna says to himself, "My thoughts turn away from playing before these elderly demigods. I will go ahead." And so he goes under some trees and he leaves his flute aside and he says, "Friend Madhumangal, look at the sweetness of the forest in spring. My dear friend, this forest of Vrindavan is giving great pleasure to our senses in various ways. Somewhere bumblebees are singing in groups, and somewhere mild breezes are cooling the whole atmosphere. Then somewhere the creepers and the tree twigs are dancing, and the mallika flowers are expanding their fragrance, and an overabundance of juice is constantly flowing in showers from the pomegranate fruit." Madhumangal says, "Friend, how can I be happy in your Vrindavan forest? I'm always afraid something will attack me. I become happy when I see the four kinds of delicious foods that Gokul's queen cooks, foods that charm all the senses." Now, Madhumangal's always hungry. She's starting to get a little hungry. Krishna says, "My friend, you should bow down before Vrindavan forest, which has ancient flowering vines with the power to fulfill all your desires." Madhumangal says, "Dear friend, everyone says you are very truthful. So I will now conduct an experiment to see if this is true." So Madhumangal very religiously folds his palms in front of a flowering vine and he says, "O flowering vines, I bow down before you. My friend is very hungry. Please give him many sweet laddus. He begs very seriously to the forest. All of a sudden, carrying a plate of laddus, candies, Purnamasi enters. She says, "Oh boy with a face like the moon, please take these candies that are delightful to the tongue." Balaram says, "Friend, see the generosity of this ancient flowering vine." Purnamasi says, "Balaram, everyone says that elderly gopi is very generous." Now there's a little pun here, because the ancient flowering vine and the elderly gopi are the same sounding words. So Krishna says, "Noble lady, which elderly gopi do you mean?" Purnamasi says, "The gopi Mukhara, a boy with a face like the moon." So Krishna says, "Why does Mukhara unexpectedly send these laddu candies to us?" Purnamasi says, "Her granddaughter will accept the hand of Abhimanyu. Following tradition, she is distributing gifts to celebrate." Krishna says, "Who is her granddaughter?" Purnamasi says, "Her name is Radha. She is delightful like moonlight." Krishna, the hairs of his body stand upright, and he says to himself, "In the talk of my two mothers, I have heard how glorious this girl is." And then he becomes very embarrassed and he begins to tremble. Purnamasi says quietly to herself, understanding Krishna's embarrassment, on some pretext, Balaram has gone from Krishna's left side. Then Krishna says to himself, "To conceal these ecstatic symptoms, I should change the subject of our talking." Then he speaks openly and he says, "Noble lady, this spring day is glorious, with a festival of many ornaments. Look, these ancient vines are blossoming with many flowers." Purnamasi smiles at Krishna and says, "Hero Krishna, the day of your festival has come. Thirsting to gather many flowers and leaves, the playful gopis will soon come here." Krishna smiles and looks at her with crooked eyes and says, "Noble lady, what is this?" Purnamasi laughs and she says, "Playful boy, do not worry. It is not against your wishes. I will say what I mean. When the gopis' houses are empty, you and your friends can happily steal their butter and yogurt." Krishna pretends to be very angry and he says, "Why do you laugh? Look, these branches and twigs in my Vrindavan forest were broken by those gopis when they picked the soft flowers. Is it not your duty to stop them?" Purnamasi says, "Enchanting boy, it is you, decorated with many flowers, that make the gopis yearn to have flowers. How can I stop them?" There's an ambiguous meaning that says that it is the gopis coming to see you with desire to see you. How can I stop that? Krishna says, "O lady with hair that is white like crane's feathers, with these words you walk on a crooked path. You will not renounce your allegiance to these offender gopis." And Purnamasi says, "Handsome boy, why are Radha and the gopis now offenders? They only steal a few flowers from your favorite trees." Krishna says, "Why has destiny again brought me news of Radha, news that enchants my heart?" Madamangal says quietly, "Why does the name Radha excite him so?" And then openly he says, friend, don't become so thirsty after this. Krishna, simultaneously angry and affectionate, says, oh, talkative friend, to hell with you. After what do I thirst? Mother monk says, oh, don't be angry, don't be angry. I was just talking about these sweet Manaha candies. Mother Mangal's words are very ambiguous. Krishna said, oh, friend, I misunderstood. But these aren't ladu candies called Manoha. They are ladus called Motika. Mother Mangal laughs and says, friend, I would not try to fool you with a pun on the name of the star Radha. Why would I try to fool you? Purnamasi is watching all of this very carefully. You see, she came with a plan to give these to Krishna and watch Krishna and to please Krishna by giving him the sound of Radha's name. So she's observing what is taking place and she says, in truth, the Brahmin boy is teasing Krishna. His heart overcome with love, Krishna is now embarrassed. Now all my desires are fulfilled. Then she says openly to Krishna, Krishna, the star Radha moves in the sky, the home of Lord Vishnu. How can anyone in the world of human beings attain her? O handsome boy, what is the use of longing for her? Krishna smiles and he looks up at the sky. Then he approaches Balaram and says, noble brother, it is already late in the afternoon. Please take the cows to the Jamuna shore and let them satisfy their thirst. And please enjoy these ladus. I will rest for a moment with my dear friends Sridham and Subal. Purnamasi watches and then she says, I should go now and see if the picture of Krishna that Vishakha was making is finished. So she respectfully takes her leave from Krishna and she departs. Krishna takes one step forward and he pauses. And he turns to his friend and he says, friend Sridham, have you ever seen this Radha, the most beautiful girl in the universe? Smiling with embarrassment, Sridham lowers his face. Subal says, friend, how can you ask if he has seen her? Radha is his sister. Then Krishna says, come, let us go under these kadamba trees by the riverbank. Into pastimes of playing the flute, I will throw this heart, excited with thoughts of Radha. And they exit. Meanwhile, Purnamasi is walking around and she comes back onto the stage and she says, why is my child Radha here, playing and joking with a friend? And she quickly hides behind some vines to see what is taking place. And from behind the scenes, she says, the beauty of Srimati Radharani's eyes forcibly devours the beauty of newly grown blue lotus flowers. And the beauty of her face surpasses that of a forest of blooming lotuses. Her bodily luster seems to place even gold in a painful situation. Thus the wonderful, unprecedented beauty of Srimati Radharani is awakening in Vrindavan. And she thinks and says, I will not stay here to joke with these two girls. I will go, hidden by these flowering vines, to Vishakha. So she leaves. Then, followed by Lalita, Radha enters. Radhika says, Lalita, what was the noble lady doing? Lalita says, friend, under that tamal tree, she was making an altar to worship the sun god. Radha looks ahead and says, I think this must be the Vrindavan forest, whose sweetness you've described to me again and again. Lalita, friend, this is the banyan tree where Krishna enjoys his pastimes. Radhika, agitated, says to herself, what sweetness are in these two syllables? Then she says, friend, whom did you say? And Lalita, intentionally smiling, says, I said Krishna. And Radhika again says to herself, oh, this name charms the hearts of all beautiful girls. I wonder what the owner of this name is like. Then concealing her emotions, she speaks openly and says, I think I will go and pick these gunja berries in the forest. Lalita jokingly says to her, a girl with restless eyes, eager to look at everything, don't enter the trap of the flowering vines. The handsome and splendid demigod who moves in that forest will cast a spell on you and make you his newest lover. Radhika says, as if she were afraid, she conceals her joking smile and says, friend Lalita, you know that this demigod has you under his spell. And Lalita laughs and says, why would he cast a spell on me? It is you who are drawn to his splendor. Then Radhika listens. She has heard the name Krishna. And now she hears the flute music that Krishna was just playing with his two friends off stage. She hears the sound of the flute and she becomes full of wonder and she says to herself, wonderful! What is that enchanting sound? And then she becomes overcome and begins to tremble. Lalita, looking at Radha, she says to herself, for the first time, the doe with delicate limbs has fallen into the hunter's trap. Radhika, with great difficulty, regains her composure. And then she says to herself, I must find the person who made that flood of nectar that is this sound. Lalita says, Radha, do you trust me? Radhika says, why do you ask? You can bear witness to that. And then Lalita says, then my dear friend will tell me, why are you so suddenly overwhelmed? And Radhika is embarrassed and she says, what is this sound from the kadamba trees that now walks on the pathway of my ears? Friend, because of this sound, I have now entered into a state that is despicable for a chaste housewife. Lalita says, oh, that is the sound of the flute. Radhika is agitated and says, what kind of flute music is this? It brings no snow or cold, but it makes me tremble. It's not a weapon, but still it cuts me. It brings no heat, but still it has set me on fire. I don't understand this flute music. Enough with this deception. Some charming mantra has been chanted by a clever musician. Then Vishakha enters at that moment, and in her hand she's carrying the picture that she has drawn of Krishna. Vishakha observes Radha and says to herself, she is transformed. Perhaps she was bitten by Krishna's flute. I will ask her about this. Vishakha approaches and says, O girl whose face has turned white, The tears from your lotus eyes muddy the ground. Your sighs and the hair of your body, your sighs make the hair of your body stand up. I think the sweetness of Krishna's flute must have entered your ears. Radhika, not giving any ear to these words, continues to tremble, and she says, Lalita, it is that sound again. Lalita says, O girl with splendid limbs, in the circle of the Jamuna shore, from a flute's beak comes a sound that is a Garuda, that defeats the snake of the gopi's peace, a Dhanvantari that cures the gopi's shyness, and an Agasta Muni that drinks up the ocean of the saintly gopi's pride. Radhika says, a great suffering has now taken birth in my heart. Only when I leave it behind will I again be able to sleep at night. Vishakha catches Radha's hand and says, Radha, in my hand I have the medicine to cure your suffering. Take it. Radhika says, come, let us go into the shade of this circle of blossoming Karnikara flowers in the courtyard. And holding Vishakha's hand and the painting in the other hand and walking with Lalita, the three of them exit. Thus ends Act 1.